Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 13. Space, the Final Frontier, or so Leo had heard numerous times on TV and a lot of other places. Well, here he was, captain of his own spaceship, flying through the stars. Big whoop. At first it had been great, leaving the planet, flying around various moons and planets of the system, keeping the crew alert. Then the drills had begun to grow tedious. The days had begun to run together, partly because of the lack of natural day and night, but mostly because of the monotony. Then the replicators had broken down, and they had to eat emergency rations that tasted like brown, wet cardboard for a week. And now this. After the replicators had broken down and had been repaired, it came time for Leo's ship to practice landing on the support frigate, the Endurance. At first, Leo had been looking forward to it. He could see Faith, and the guys could get off the ship for a bit. But that was 3 days ago. Since they had received word about the landing drill, they had been on the frigate 120 times, but never for more than 10 minutes at a time. Every time they landed, Captain D. Clooney would come over the comm channel and tell them to do it again. Maybe a little faster, a little slower, under combat conditions, with the port thrusters out, with the engine power fluctuating, a little straighter, or maybe with a different pilot. This time, Leo had been banished from the bridge to prove to both the senior captain and the crew they could do it without him. So here he was, sitting in the lower rear ball turret, facing away from the frigate, listening to the landing through his headphones. So, with nothing else to do, Leo cruised through the ship's library. He had been doing this in his off time for relaxation. Well, with what off time there was, and to set a good example for the crew, he had set up a rule. After the evening meal, if there was no drill in progress, no one was allowed to work on an assigned tutorial program. Leo had made this decision so no one would get burnt out on them. He also wanted the crew to be multi-talented. Leo had begun cruising through the library and touched on all types of subjects. Earth history, since he had been snatched, history of the Horde, weapons of the Horde, interstellar cartography, and 100 other topics or so. Leo found it fun and easy, that is, once he let Larry help him. He could jump off in one direction of study, having Larry keep a record of all the other directions he wanted to explore. Plus, he could get as extensive or shallow in a subject as he wanted with a few words to Larry. The crew had done some of this studying as well, especially Sergeant Gonzalez. He was continually in the library. In fact, he had missed a few workout sessions because he had been buried so deep in study. The workout sessions, on the average, had gone better than both he and Yoshida had thought they would. In fact, they had gone so well, Leo had decided to increase the gravity in the entire ship to keep the guys challenged. Sure, it had been a tenth of a G, but Leo and everyone else had noticed it almost immediately. To make training still harder, Leo had Larry adjust the atmospheric pressure as well, that of a mile above sea level. This had immediately made everyone start to complain of how hard it was to breathe when working out, but Leo had stood firm and kept the atmospheric setting where they were, hoping the guys would be tougher because of it. The only people that were happy lately were Logan and Packer. The main reason for this was because they were flying. Every morning at ship's dawn, they would climb into their ships and fly off to different sectors, to land on different types of ships, or planets, or moon surfaces. Leo looked up. The ship was inside the frigate now. Leo powered down his turret and waited for the inevitable call from De Clooney. Sure enough, in 2 minutes, Larry announced the call. Grant here, sir.
Captain Grant, that is it.
Pardon me, sir, Leo asked. Your tasks are now complete. No more landing drills. You have completed this phase. Have your crew stand down, prepare for the night in dry dock. Techs are going to do a complete diagnostic on your ship for the next 24 hours, De Clooney stated. Yes, sir, Leo said, shocked. Your crew is to grab sufficient gear for the next 24 hours and stay in the visitor's quarters. You are to stay in the visiting officer's quarters down the hall from my quarters in officer's country, and you are to have dinner with me and some of my staff tonight, De Clooney said in the friendliest tone he had ever heard the man use. Roger, sir, what time? 1900 hours sharp, Captain, De Clooney barked with a smile. De Clooney out. Leo climbed out of the turret and walked towards the front of the ship. On the way, he told Larry to call a full crew meeting in the lounge. Leo went to the lounge and grabbed a Coke and sat down and propped his feet up, trying to look calm and hiding his excitement about the chance to get off the ship for a day. The crew wandered in, quietly, tired from the boredom and seemingly endless drills. They grabbed drinks and food, finding their favorite niches. Leo did not say anything. He just sat there drinking. Yoshi sat down at the table across from him and looked glum. Leo looked up and walked to the center of the room where everyone was assembled. "Does anyone know what we did wrong on the last landing?" Leo asked, looking at everyone in turn. They just looked at each other, and Leo, shaking their heads, not having a clue. Moon started to raise his hand, and Leo motioned him to put it down. After a few minutes of uncomfortable silence, Leo decided to give them the good news. "Nothing. We have met the high standards of Captain Senior Grade De Clooney and have been invited to stay a night on the frigate." Leo had never heard the crew so rowdy before. They jumped, they cheered, they stomped their feet, and everyone shook his hand at least twice. Everyone, that is, except Yoshi. He only shook Leo's hand once. "Okay, everyone, quiet down," Leo shouted. They continued. "Quiet," Leo shouted at the top of his lungs. No response. Sergeant Gonzalez whistled as loud as he could. The mob quieted down immediately. "Thank you, Sergeant," Leo nodded to Gonzalez. Gonzalez nodded back. "Now then, you all have 10 minutes to grab a bag and line up at the ramp. We will be escorted to the guest quarters." As soon as the words were out of Leo's mouth, the crew disappeared, being herded by Sergeant Gonzalez. Leo looked around. Yoshi, Fia, Moon, and Gutenberg were all still standing around. "Well, what are you guys standing around for? Yoshi and Gutenberg, it is your job to look out for these guys and make sure they don't get into too much trouble. Fia, I want you to hook up with Chief Westlock and get a private comm channel assigned. If she wants to do anything to the ship, I want you notified first. Also, Larry?" "Yes, Captain," the computer answered. "Keep a log of everything and everyone that comes out on the ship, and if you think any substantial changes are being made, check with Fia." "Yes, sir," the computer answered again. Leo turned to face his co-pilot. "Moon, you have the most important task. I want you to come find me at 2200 hours. Make up some excuse and drag me away from De Clooney so I can come join you guys and have a beer or two with the crew." He turned and faced the rest of the officers. "I am going to be having dinner tonight with the captain and his staff." "Oh, hobnobbing with the big boys, eh, Captain?" Fia taunted. Yoshi and Fia high-fived it. "Go pack your bags, you guys, or would you rather stay here on the ship?" The officers started to move, and Leo followed Yoshi towards their room. Leo made a quick call to Packer and Logan, who were out on maneuvers, informing them of the situation, and they stated they would join the crew in about 6 hours. Leo threw his cologne, deodorant, and a change of underwear in his bag, along with his comm panel, strapped on his gun belt, tied it down, and put on his uniform utility vest, and pulled his ponytail out from underneath his shirt and checked himself in the mirror. Not bad, Leo thought, although he could use a shower and shave. These last few days had put a dent in his typical hygiene schedule. Yoshi had left a few minutes ago. Leo knew he would be waiting with the rest of the crew down below. Leo exited his quarters, climbed down the ladder. Leo heard a rebel yell and knew it was Holiday, the kid from Arizona. He yelled the same yell every time something fun was about to happen. Some of the other guys found it annoying, especially when they were standing right next to him. But he kept it up. Not this time, though. Leo heard the crew join in similar yells and catcalls. Leo jumped off the ladder and walked to the top of the ramp where the crew was waiting. Yoshi yelled for attention, and the crew silenced and snapped to. Leo walked slowly past the crew, looking each of them over. Each of them had their sidearms and comlinks on, not that he really needed to check anymore. It had become second nature to have them when leaving the ship. Some of them also had their favorite hand-to-hand weapons on them. This was also normal procedure. Each of them usually practiced with whatever weapon they liked in their own spare time. Leo had even caught Flavius, the timid technician, practicing with a pair of nunchucks on occasion. Leo did not think it would matter that they had knives, martial art weapons, and other assorted blades on them, seeing how it was mandatory to carry firearms when off the ship. "Well, my merry band of cutthroats," they smiled at this, "I want you all go out, drink, and be merry. Break a few hearts, don't steal anything bigger than your head, and come back here on the bounce when you get the call." All at once there was a chorus of, "Aye, aye, Captain Grant." Also joining in the chorus was the voice of Winchester, the robot, and Larry, the computer. Leo looked at Yoshi, who was smiling like a Cheshire cat. Then he looked at Moon, who was laughing, as was the rest of the mob. Leo just shook his head. His mob. "Winchester, would you please stay with the crew and help them out?" "Roger, Captain," Winchester said, with a bit of chirpiness in his voice that seemed new. Leo gave Winchester a quizzical look, but he had other things to think about. "Okay, you mob of malcontents. I'll be having dinner with Captain De Clooney tonight. But afterwards I'll try and look you up and have a drink or two with you," Leo stated emphatically, winking at Moon in the process. The funny guys shouted aye aye again, and Leo looked at them with a fake cross look. He shook his head, moved towards the ramp control, hit the switch for the ramp to drop, and turned and smiled at the crew. The ramp dropped with a low hum, and when the ramp was all the way down, Leo motioned for the crew to move out. He fell in step with them as they moved down the ramp. They roughly marched to where Lieutenant Farlow was standing with Warrant Officer Westlock. Leo smiled when he saw Faith, but tried to stay professional. Lieutenant Farlow came to attention and snapped out a salute. "Good morning, Captain. If you don't mind, I will lead you to the guest quarters. I will have someone here momentarily to lead your men to theirs. Also, Chief Westlock here will initiate the diagnostics and subsequent repairs on your ship." "Sounds like a good plan to me. But Chief Westlock, before you begin any repairs to my ship, I'd like to get an okay from either myself, my first mate, or my chief engineer." Faith seemed slightly insulted by this. "Roger, Captain Grant. I will start with repairing your showers," the blonde technician stated. "Why the showers?" Leo asked, looking confused. "Well, from your appearance and standing downwind from your crew, they are obviously not working." The crew roared with laughter. Leo just nodded. She had gotten him. She smiled back. "I should have a list of any possible repairs for you first thing in the morning." "That would be great, Chief. I'd like to thank you and your techs in advance for all the work you are doing." Leo reached out and shook her hand. She shook it back, giving him a smug look. Lieutenant Farlow interrupted the brief reunion and asked Leo to follow him. Leo turned to his first officer, who nodded, and Leo turned back towards Westlock. "Well, she is all yours, Westlock. Be gentle with her," Leo said. Westlock looked at Leo, shook her head, smiling. Then she motioned for her head technicians to gather around front of the ship. Leo fell in line behind Farlow, confident that when he got the report from Westlock that anything wrong would be duly noted, but he hoped to see her before the next morning. Maybe he would get to sneak away and have a late-night drink with her tonight down on the repair deck. Leo followed Farlow across the repair bay and into the closest elevator. Farlow pushed a button, and the lift went up at a surprising speed. "I watched your landing. They were very good, especially your pilot, Lieutenant Burgi." "Thank you. Yoshi worked hard at it and ran through the simulator about 100 times before the initial attempt. The captain must be impressed by your crew. In fact, this is the first crew that he has given a full 24-hour onboard pass to." "Really? Well, that is something." "One crew did get a 20-hour pass, but they had to leave the ship after only 16 hours. Leo waited for a reason, but the elevator stopped and the doors opened, and Farlow walked out. Leo followed the man, intending to ask about the other crew, but Farlow reached the door and keyed it open and went in. The room was large, about twice as large as Leo's own cabin, and there was no bunk bed, but a very large, queen-sized bed. The rest of the room was modest, with a replicator in one wall, along with some shelves, also a door leading to a very large bathroom, and a desk with a console built into the wall. "This is your room, Captain Grant. If you need anything, call the yeoman on duty, and he will get it for you," Farlow announced as he stood in the doorway. "Okay, thanks. May I ask a question, Lieutenant Farlow?" Leo said to the smaller man. "Yes, if I can't answer it, I will," Farlow responded, still standing in the doorway. "Why was the other crew thrown off after only 16 hours of a 20-hour pass?" Farlow said one word right before he did an about-face and went out the door. "Marines."
Chapter 14. "It is currently 1855, Captain Grant," the computer announced to Leo, as he had asked it to do when he first settled into the quarters. "Thanks," Leo said absently, as he made his way to the door and out into the hallway. Once he had settled in, he had checked in with Larry to see how the diagnostics were going. Then he had linked up with Yoshi, who was now sharing quarters with Chief Fia. After that was done, and he found everything under control on all fronts, got himself in the right frame of mind for an evening with De Clooney and his staff. He first ran a good old-fashioned hot water shower for about 50 minutes, laid down on the queen-sized bed, and watched Three Stooges shorts and assorted Looney Tunes cartoons. Luckily, he had set the alarm before he started watching the videos, because sometime during it he fell asleep. Leo was beginning to realize that there was nothing like a good nap to keep his batteries charged. He woke up after the first alarm, got another shower and dressed. He got a clean duty uniform from the replicator and strapped on his gun. Checked his look in the mirror, decided it was up to par, and steeled himself for a stuffy evening with the senior captain. Leo found himself at the door to De Clooney's cabin 2 minutes later. He rang the chime and the door opened. He walked in and found himself in a very large room with a long table decked out with candles and formal place settings. Standing near the head of the table was Senior Captain De Clooney in a jet black uniform with gold trim cuffs, a gold recon insignia, a bayonet crossing a lightning bolt pinned to his left part of his chest, and rank insignia on his shoulders. He was talking to a man who was wearing a similar uniform, but with a gold eagle clasping a sword insignia on the chest. Lieutenant Farley was dressed in the same black uniform and was standing at the replicator getting a beverage. Suddenly, Leo got a sinking feeling he was in the wrong uniform. Either that, or he was the only one still in the military, and everyone else was wearing newfangled tuxedos. The door opened behind him, and in entered Chief Warrant Officer Faith Westlock, and she was also wearing the same type of uniform, black with gold trim, only instead of wearing pants, like the men, she was wearing a skirt that showed a nice portion of her legs. Terrific, Leo thought. Now he knew he was out of uniform. Captain DeClunie walked towards Leo with his hand outstretched. Captain Grant, I see that you did not get the word to wear the formal uniform to dinner. DeClunie shot Lieutenant Farlow a dirty look. That would appear to be the situation, sir, Leo said, smiling through his embarrassment. DeClunie leaned over and whispered in his ear while still holding his hand. Also, we do not wear sidearms to dinner either. Leo just shook his head at this. Captain DeClunie let go of his hand and clapped a hand on Leo's shoulder now. He then spoke loud enough for the rest of the room to hear him. Everyone, shall we eat? DeClunie led Leo to a seat at his right hand, and the officer whom he did not know sat at DeClunie's left. Westlock smiled at him and sat to Leo's left. Then the door opened and a second female officer entered and sat down directly across from Faith. Lieutenant Farlow then sat at the opposite end from DeClunie. DeClunie sat himself down and got comfortable. I would like to welcome to my table for the first time Captain Leo David Grant, commanding officer of the 12th Reconnaissance Ship of the 2nd Squadron. There were polite nods from everyone at the table, and DeClunie continued. Captain, I am not sure if you are familiar with everyone present. Sitting directly across from the table from you is Lieutenant Patrick Devlin of the 2nd Squadron Marine Force. He is here to help the crew of my ship practice some drills on how to repel boarders, such as the Alarians occasionally send when they want to capture a ship intact. Lieutenant nodded across the table from him, but did not smile. And sitting next to you is Chief Warrant Officer Faith Westlock, head technician for all ships under my command. He turned towards Faith, who did not reach out and shake his hand, but gave him one of her dazzling smiles. DeClunie continued with his introductions. Lieutenant Junior Grade Maria Van Peterson, chief pilot for this ship. The dark-haired girl just smiled politely and nodded towards him. And sitting at the end of the table is a man that you are already familiar with, Lieutenant Senior Grade Jonathan Farlow, my executive officer. Evening, Captain. Sorry about the confusion on the uniform. I should have informed you. My fault, totally. That is totally all right. No harm done, Leo said, and trying to mean it, even though he was slightly miffed. Well, now that introductions are completed, shall we eat? DeClunie stated. Oh, and Captain Grant, since you are new to the protocol here, I shall inform you of one other thing. No talking of training, the war, or related matters. I try and keep my dinner conversation to refined topics, such as art, music, and like matters. With that, the dinner proceeded, with the senior captain and Lieutenant Devlin dominating the conversation for the most part. Talking of artwork, DeClunie preferring sculptures such as Rodin, and Devlin being a devoted follower of painting by people such as Rembrandt. From the tilt of the conversation, Leo surmised that both DeClunie and Devlin were from families of social standing, whereas Lieutenant Van Peterson seemed to know a great deal about thoroughbred horses, and her eyes lit up when she talked to them in riding. Faith and Farlow remained silent, except when questions were posed to them by DeClunie. To Leo, these questions seemed slightly planned, as if DeClunie had told him what he was going to ask them beforehand. Leo made a mental note to ask Faith about that later. The dinner finished on a leisurely note, with Leo and Devlin being invited to the captain's lounge to smoke cigars. The others excused themselves and departed, Faith giving him a private wink before she left. The captain's lounge was something else, with almost one full wall being a glass-like substance in which Leo could see outside the ship. To say the least, the view was incredible. Along with cigars, brandy was available, which DeClunie showed Leo how to savor. Obviously, Devlin had done this type of thing before and needed no instruction. Three men stood there smoking and looking at the stars for a few minutes. DeClunie, always the host, stayed silent for a few minutes, enjoying the view. He then moved into one of the overstuffed chairs near the window. Leo and Lieutenant Devlin joined him in nearby chairs, and they all continued to stare at the starfield revealed out the window. Well, gentlemen, there it is, the frontier, and also out there, somewhere, our destinies, DeClunie said, motioning with his hand holding onto his cigar. We will find glorious deaths fighting our foes, or a victorious greeting when we return to Earth. But one thing is certain. Surrender, defeat, failure. None of these is an option. Leo nodded, agreeing with this, after his studies of the Horde and what they did to races they subjugated. Agreed,
and echoed by my own commander as well, Senior Captain, Devlin added. Leo did not know what to say at this point, so trying to be wise for once, he just kept his mouth shut and nodded again. They stared out the window, not speaking again, just finishing the cigars and being quiet. De Clooney stood first. Leo and Devlin joined him, and he then motioned for the Marine Lieutenant and Leo back towards the dining room. Well, Lieutenant Devlin, thank you for a pleasant evening. Prepare for the next drill and initiate at your leisure. No warning for me or my staff. Just use the code word and the computer will do the rest, De Clooney stated directly to Devlin and shook his hand. Devlin stepped back, saluted, did a smart about face, and strode out the door. Good man, De Clooney said, more to himself than to Leo, who was watching him go. Then De Clooney turned his full attention to Leo. Shall we go back and have another drink and talk? Leo followed him back into the lounge and the great view. Leo slumped down into his chair, finally back in his VIP quarters. The last hour, Leo had listened to the senior captain talk about glory, victories in battle, and noble death. In the back of his mind, he kept wondering if the outfitters had perhaps made a mistake and made a raving lunatic the commanding officer. And if so, what were the safeguards from letting the man kill them all in order to achieve a place in the warrior's happy hunting ground, or wherever De Clooney wanted to end up? Leo was disturbed from this depressing chain of thoughts by the chime at his door. Enter, he said absently, and stood up. Hey, Leo, what are you doing? It was the chief engineer, who was obviously drunk. Followed closely behind him was the ever-soft-spoken Lieutenant Kim Moon, who also appeared to be quite happy as well. The two of them entered his room, the chief with a slightly rolling walk, and Kim cautiously trying to stay close enough to the other man to keep him from falling if necessary, but staying out of his reach in case the chief wanted to give him one of his little affectionate love taps that caused black and blue marks. Leo stood to greet them, and the chief, seeing his opportunity, charged, lifting Leo up and throwing him across his shoulder. For such a big guy, he can really move when he wants to, was Leo's first thought. Next thing Leo knew, he was being carried down the hall, over the huge engineer's shoulder, with Kim walking behind him. Leo decided not to fight the chief at this point, so he did the only thing he could. Co-pilot, report on the current situation, he barked at Kim in his most commanding voice he could muster while swinging from his chief engineer's shoulder. Kim, sensing the absurdity of the situation, decided to play along. Well, sir, after arriving and settling into our fine accommodations, it's a dump. The men are sleeping in common bays with no privacy or nothing, the Simone yelled over his unoccupied shoulder as they entered an elevator and proceeded down. Lieutenant Burgeye sent out patrols to do some reconnaissance. Go forth and find wine, women, and song, were his exact words, the chief chimed in again as they exited the elevator. Kim, obviously feeling safe with the Simone occupied in such a manner, hauled off and gave the giant a swift boot in a gluteus maximus. The chief just grunted and continued down the hallway. The captain asked for me to brief him, you big grease monkey. So who is stopping you? The chief replied. Kim just rolled his eyes. Well, after about a half an hour, the men came back. They found the bar, but it did not open for a few hours. So we all got catnaps, and we were there promptly when it opened. I banged on those doors for a half an hour, but they would not open a second early. We are currently occupying commanding terrain, with access routes to key terrain under our control. The Samoan turned quickly, Leo's head narrowly missing a nearby wall, and gave the little Korean co-pilot a punch to his left shoulder. Leo, we got the best seats in the house, next to the pool table, dartboard, very close to the bar, and near the bathroom. Ow, I think the captain got the point from my briefing, you big ox, Kim said, rubbing his shoulder. The argument ended as they entered what could only be considered a battleship bar. At least those were the first words to come to Leo's still upside-down brain. The walls were done in a flat black, with recessed lighting, dimly lighting the interior. One wall was another window to space, and the rest of the bar was filled with chairs and tables, three pool tables, and a bar running the length of one wall. The first song he heard was something country, but he could not place it. The next noise he heard was a rebel yell coming from his crew when they saw the big chief, the little lieutenant. Mission accomplished, Lieutenant Burgeye, Kim said, snapping to attention and throwing a salute. Leo did not see what happened, but he felt a bunch of hands on him as he was thrown on a pool table with a beer thrust in his face and forced down his throat, but most of it going down the side of his face and onto the pool table. Okay, let me drink some of this, Leo said, sitting up and grabbing for the mug. Sitting up, he found himself surrounded by his crew, including Winchester, all looking very happy, and most of them looking like they were in various stages of intoxication. The next few hours were a blur of jokes, pool and dart games, and songs being sung on the karaoke machine by his crew and other patrons of the bar. Almost everyone in the crew wanted to have a drink with him. The only one not drinking was Sergeant Gonzalez, who Leo learned was a teetotaler, something picked up from his time at the monastery. Leo was talking to Packer in the corner about the drills they had just done in the fighters when he heard shouts over the classic rock and roll song Blue Suede Shoes. During the course of the evening, the bar had been filling up with mechanics and other off-duty personnel, and coming in a few at a time were Marines dressed in the black, gray, and white camouflage uniforms. They were almost as loud as Leo's crew, but it was a big bar, and the Marines were mostly on the other side of it, so he did not give it another thought. Now Lieutenant Farlow's answer came back to him about why the other crews had gotten kicked off early. Marines. Drunken idiot, why don't you watch where you're going? One large Marine shouted in Fandakowski's face. I already said I was sorry. What are you, deaf or something, Jarhead? Fandakowski shouted back, staring up at the larger man. Leo started to move towards a confrontation to end it before it got out of hand. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught movement at the door and saw it was Lieutenant Devlin. Good, Leo thought. This will end peacefully with both officers here. Leo reached the site of the confrontation a split second before the lieutenant did, and was rewarded with an elbow in the jaw by his own man, who was drawing back to take a poke at the Marine. Leo staggered back and caught himself on the bar. Is that what you teach your men, defending themselves by hitting their commanding officer when a fight begins? It was Devlin, standing beside his Marine with his arm around the shoulder of the man, both of them laughing very hard. Fandakowski, who had turned and was trying to help Leo back up, turned around again, and Leo could have sworn he heard a growl for a split second, and then he launched himself towards both the lieutenant and the large Marine. Next thing Leo knew, he was being charged by two Marines who had been standing nearby, and was being picked up again for the second time in the evening, this time by not-so-gentle hands, and was thrown behind the bar. By the time he got back into a standing position, the bar was in total chaos. His men, seeing him fly over the bar, had engaged the enemy. Leo was up long enough to see Packer take out two guys with a flying scissor kick, with his wingman Logan land his own flying sidekick into the solar plexus of a small Chinese Marine. Then Leo got hit by a flying body and was back on the floor behind the bar, untangling himself from the other men's arms and legs. He realized it was his own Ranger, Fandakowski. Standing up, he yelled at the man, "Happy with yourself, Ranger?" The gunner was getting up on the bar and gave Leo a hand up as well. "Static, Captain." And with that, he jumped on top of three Marines headed towards skinny little Flavius, who had just used his nunchucks to knock out a large Marine who was easily the size of Chief Tuatelli. Leo grabbed a swig from a beer that had not spilled yet, then tried a flying kick towards Lieutenant Devlin, who was going on it with Gonzalez and Abraham, and landed flat on his butt when the target moved out of the way. By the time he got back up, Abraham was flying backwards over a table, and Gonzalez was wading in closer to Devlin. Leo got a beer glass in the small of his back and staggered forward slightly. When he focused again on the fight immediately to his front, Gonzalez was down as well, flat on his back. Leo got mad. He forgot all about all his training he received and just tackled Devlin from behind. The forward momentum made Devlin crash into a wall. Leo felt the crash as well, but when he felt Devlin's body go slightly limp, he wrapped his arms around the waist, lifted him up, and tossed him over a nearby table. What had seemed like a good move at first, Leo realized almost immediately that he had done a bad thing. The tackle had landed him and Devlin near one of the doors, which had opened and revealed a new, fresh group of Marines. They swarmed in over Leo, and he felt himself being held down and pummeled, and then there was a flash of light, and things went black. What? Leo shouted and sputtered and spit as he woke up after being splashed with cold water. He sat up aching, feeling as though he had been ridden over by a tank. He was still in the bar the guys had found, but it was a lot different than when he had walked in. First, all the lights were on. It was just as bright as in the main landing bay. Only one table was still standing, and maybe three chairs were still useful for their original purposes. The rest would make good kindling. There was glass everywhere, and instead of the place being filled with people, there were only his crew and two other people. Leo processed all this in a half a second. In that second, he realized the only two people who were there were Captain DeClooney and Lieutenant Farlow, and the short lieutenant was currently walking around with a water hose, squirting his crew members into a wakeful condition. Leo stood slowly and gained his feet with some uncertainty, aching all over. Leo walked over to the table where DeClooney was. Along the way, he did a fast head count while he looked over his crew. They appeared to be coming around, and they appeared to look like he felt like crap. But at least they were together in one place, and everyone was accounted for. DeClooney coughed. Leo turned slowly in the senior captain's direction, trying to straighten his uniform in the process. Yes, sir. DeClooney stood and walked around the table and looked around the room. Well, sir, DeClooney stated with not a bit of humor, you know what you and your crew have done here? Leo was aching all over and felt really bad, probably the worst he had felt in his life. He didn't reply at first. He reached out and helped his communications officer to his feet, gave him a nod, and put him in a chair. DeClooney just stared at him, waiting for an answer, crossing his arms, and smiled that smug smile of his as he leaned against the bar. Leo turned back towards DeClooney. Senior Captain, I don't have a clue what the heck you're talking about, and frankly, I don't give a flying fig.
Duclini's face dropped for about a second, then returned to that smile. Leo was now totally clueless, so he grabbed one of the two remaining chairs, turned it around, and sat in it backwards. "Well, Captain Junior Grade Leo David Grant, you have done something no other captain and crew have done during their brief stays here on my ship. You have started a fight, and through it all, your crew, and even your general-purpose droid, acted, drank, and yes, even fought as a single unit." If Leo was clueless before, he was now stumped, and replied the only way he could, "Huh?" Leo looked around at his crew to see if anyone else knew what the heck the captain was talking about. His crew were now gathered around in a loose semicircle, sitting on the floor, on the last table, and on the remaining chairs, even though most of them appeared to be about ready to collapse. Yoshi caught Leo's eye, and Yoshi just shrugged through his bloody nose. Duclini continued, "Captain Grant, you may or may not know this, not being a military man, only a student, but the first and most important part of a military unit is cohesion. A unit, or in this case a crew, may not be the best equipped or even the best trained, but if they can form bonds that will not break in the most trying circumstances, they have a chance. To paraphrase a quaint American saying, united we stand, divided we fall." Leo was starting to grasp the man's point, like knowing the answer to a math question, but not understanding how he knew the answer. Duclini looked around at Leo's crew. Some of them looked back. Some of them were nursing their wounds, but they were all listening. "You see, the last 11 crews that landed here and got passes ended up in this same bar," and he motioned around the room, "and they all got into a fight with the Marines." The same Marines. Duclini smiled at this as if it were a private joke that only he knew. "But for some reason, not everyone in his crews participated in the fight. Some of them stood around and watched, some even left the room. Then the 12th ship arrives. Same conditions, same room, same Marines, but you," and he pointed his long, slender fingers at all of them in turn, "every single one of you joined in the fight, coming to each other's aid, protecting each other, and it appeared to me that some of you might even sought vengeance when one of your comrades fell." Now it added up to Leo. "You mean this was a test? You set this whole fight up, you jerk? Someone could have been hurt. What if someone had drawn a weapon? And we're all carrying weapons here, in case you haven't noticed, Captain." Duclini smiled and motioned for Leo to sit down. Leo did, partially to keep himself from hitting the man, but he also wanted to hear more, so he sat. "Yes, I did set this all up. As for someone getting hurt, well, I took some precautions. All the Marines had on body armor to protect from blades. This room is set up with energy siphons, so all your weapons could not fire, as Lieutenant Logan Mansfield found out when he tried to fire at a Marine jumping his wingman, Lieutenant Packer." Leo shot a glance at Logan, who had drawn his weapon and checked it out. "It's dead," Logan said as he reholstered his weapon. "Yes, and that Marine might have been if I had not taken that precaution. Mr. Logan, if you ever get into any more bar fights and you draw a deadly weapon on a member of the fleet without sufficient cause, you will be hung by the neck until dead. After a fair and speedy trial, of course. Even if you set the weapon at the lowest setting first. Do I make myself clear, Lieutenant?" Duclini said, with a nasty reptilian smile of his, directed fully at Logan. Then Leo saw something he had never believed possible. Logan swallowed hard, as if he was scared, and then lowered his head. "Yes, sir." I also had emergency medical personnel standing by outside the room, and when things started to get too hairy, like when your captain was getting pummeled by four Marines, and half the crew drew bladed weapons, I hit the button, which released the pre-positioned stun grenades that knocked everyone out for a few minutes. "I had the Marines woken up a few minutes before your crew, which brings us to the present," Clooney summed up. The senior captain turned around and ordered wine from a robot bartender who had been standing by patiently throughout the entire talk. Leo was too stunned to say anything, so he just sat there mulling it all over. While these thoughts cascaded through his mind, Clooney grabbed his carafe of wine and glass and walked towards the door. Leo watched him go, and then he turned around. "Oh, Captain Grant, I'd like to see you and your officers tomorrow at 1300 hours for lunch. And don't worry, dress as normal due to uniform, with sidearms, and fully charge them, please. They are no good empty." Farlow followed him out with the ever-present comm panel in his left hand. Leo just sat there, aching all over and feeling bad, with no clue what to do next. Luckily, Packer, being a party animal, knew what to do. He bellied up to the bar, got a pitcher of beer, turned around. "Well, sir," he said, saluting Leo with the beer mug, "I guess we passed the test. And after a test, everyone should rest and relax. So I suggest we get a couple more pitchers and go to a place I know will make us all feel better." Chapter 15. Leo lay in bed, feeling achy and tired,
but good all at the same time. Packer, his ever-faithful and fast-witted frontiersman, had led them to a large room with a very nice feature. Two large whirlpools and a swimming pool. The crew had taken over the two tubs, just being one mass of men, and sort of ran out the few people soaking in the tubs. They had soaked while occasionally sending someone to the replicators for drinks, and then the crew had started playing around the pool, having chicken fights. Some of the girls the guys knew joined them, and the fun had multiplied. Twice, Winchester had probably saved Holiday from drowning when he had slipped beneath the surface in the pool. Holiday had the unfortunate genetics that did not produce a great deal of buoyancy. Sergeant Gonzalez discovered something when playing around with a nearby comm panel mounted near the pool. There was a visual record of the fight. The crew just went nuts over this. They played the thing at least 50 times, cheering themselves on, watching each other take blows in slow motion, and giving them as well. Leo was particularly interested in one section of the visual playback. It showed Winchester standing over a fallen Ranger Verde as he shook off the effects of a chair thrown across the room and hitting him in the head. Winchester moved in a circle around Verde, shielding him from several random missiles consisting of beer bottles and chairs with his own body, until the Ranger had regained the ability to stand on his own. Leo thought this over as he watched Winchester standing there impassively, watching the crew splash around and roughhouse in the water. Leo had read through the droid's major programming guidelines a few days before. One guideline in particular had stuck out. This one forbid him from participating in any violence, such as firing a weapon, or hitting someone, or even putting someone intentionally in harm's way. But the next major tenet was to protect the crew at all costs. Leo just shook his head. It had been a long trip so far. It got longer every day. But at least the robot was on Leo's side, and he had just demonstrated it. Leo rolled over and fluffed up the pillow and kept his eyes closed, trying to go to sleep again, when the door chimed. Leo looked at the clock. 0900 hours, and a long time till his meeting with the Clooney. "Who is it?" Leo yelled. The door chimed again. "What?" Leo yelled again. The door chimed again, and then again. Leo got out of bed, wrapped himself in a blanket, and stumbled over to the door, hitting the button to open it. "What?" "That is a fine good morning, Captain Grant," Faith Westlock said as she brushed past him, walking into the room. She walked over to the bed and sat down. She was wearing a mechanic's black jumpsuit and looked like she had been up all night from the circles under her eyes. "Sorry, you woke me up," Leo said, walking over to the chair, keeping himself huddled up in the blanket. Faith laid back on the bed and did not talk for a second, then sighed. "I spent all night with two ships of my mechanics checking out your ship. It did not help matters that Clooney shut off all the heat and air in the bay, and we had to do all the repair work in our spacesuits. Then he turned off all the lights, and we had to work with just our suit lights. Sounds like my night was better than yours, at least for the most part." "Yeah, I heard about your fight, and your crew passing Clooney's little test. Congratulations. I am sorry I could not warn you beforehand, but we were all told not to," she said, sounding like she would be asleep any second. Leo stood up, grabbed a t-shirt, pulled it on over his head, and kneeled beside the bed. "I understand fully. Hey, you want some breakfast before you crash out of my bed, lady?" Faith rolled over on her side, smiled, and sleepily said, "What you got in mind, Leo?" Shivers ran up and down his spine as she smiled at him. "Well, I haven't had any waffles in a long time, and OJ, does that sound like a good start?" "Sounds good. You gonna make it?" "Sure, no one can replicate better than me," Leo said, getting up and moving over to the slot. They ate sitting in bed, talking about the diagnostics on the ship and dinner last night. He learned that DeClooney was trying to give some culture to his officers. She described it as trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, and the only one who seemed to be enthusiastic about it was Lieutenant Van Peterson, who was from the early 1900s, Boston, and probably a blue blood. Leo had introduced her to movies after they first met, and she was partial to musicals. So after they talked, they watched South Pacific. Faith fell asleep about halfway through the movie. Leo turned it off and started reading, fell asleep about a half an hour later. When Leo woke up, he was all alone. There was a note on the nightstand from Faith that read, "Dear Leo, sorry, left without saying goodbye, but got a call for a minor mechanical emergency, and you look beat, so I let you sleep. Thanks for breakfast. I'll talk to you later, and we'll see you before you take off again. Faith." Leo smiled to himself, propped himself up in the bed, smiling at the thought of her. He got up after a few minutes and got ready to take on the rest of the day. Chapter 16. The ship was in great shape, the guys were in a good mood, and the kiss Faith and him had stolen in an empty tool room off the main hangar bay would hold Leo for about 2 months, which is about how long it was going to be before he saw her again. The squadron was about to move off for training around the five planets in the next solar system, equal time spent at each for a variety of maneuvers, ground, aerial, and orbital. Leo was looking forward to it all. First up on the agenda was getting the ship into hyperdrive, the first time for both the crew and Larry. Leo had read out loud the conditions that were going to be experienced as they made the jump to hyperspace. The disorientation, the possible dizziness, the incredible light show outside of the ship, and finally the total blackness outside the hull once the hyperspace was achieved. But now they were about to experience it, the Big H. The ship was outside the gravimetric influences of the Sanctuary solar system and ready to make the jump. The procedure had been established for a planned jump, and they were going to follow it to the letter. Larry, computations still current? Yoshi asked. All calculations current, and 30 seconds to jump position, Larry's voice responded. All personnel, sound off by numbers for the jump, signifying that you are ready. That is where all the personnel chimed in. 1, Lieutenant Yoshi Burgai stated. 2, Ensign Kim Moon. 3, Ensign Abraham Gutenberg. 4, Chief Fiagata Tuatelli. 5, Lieutenant Packer. 6, Lieutenant Logan Mansfield. 7, Sergeant Gonzalez. 8, Ranger Fundakowski. 9, Ranger Flavius. 10, Ranger Holiday. 11, Ranger Pablo. 12, Technician Finucci. 13, Winchester. Leo had thrown the robot in, even though he is not called for in the manual, to ensure that he was part of the crew and let no one forget it. We are ready for the jump. Give me a countdown, Larry, Yoshi said. 3, 2, 1, jump. And the world turned in on itself and then threw itself inside out. The scene outside the cockpit looked to Leo like an artist's palette smeared over the universe, along with a 4th of July fireworks display thrown in for more color. Then it was all over, and peace returned outside the cockpit in the way of total, absolute darkness. Countdown in descending order. The order was reversed, and everyone responded in the correct order. Leo let out a sigh of relief. The first jump had been one of worry for the entire fleet. One fact that had been discovered by the outfitters about the jump in the hyperspace, some humans would not take it well. There was no way to tell who it would be and how it would affect them. Theories were advanced by the fleet doctors that a negative reaction to the jump could be paralysis, insanity, and perhaps death. But these were all just theories, and no one had known exactly what was going to happen to affected individuals. Leo was relieved that everyone is apparently all right. Leo punched up the internal medical scan and ran it on everyone. No major changes in anyone's chemical composition or metabolic rates, just a bit of adrenaline spikes. Heart and respiration rates slightly elevated. Good, good, and good, Leo thought. Everyone normal. If any changes were noted by anyone in the crew, the affected crew member was to report directly to the auto dock and receive a full checkup. The outfitters had done something extremely right in inventing the auto dock. It was right after an accident back on Sanctuary. Leo had dislocated his shoulder when he had landed wrong during a particularly strenuous bout with Finucci. Finucci had immediately begun to administer first aid, and unknowingly, without thinking about it, he popped the arm back into place. Then Finucci stopped and stared at his hands, while Leo recovered from the enormous amount of pain that he had suffered for that split second. "How did you know how to do that?" Leo asked, after about a minute of recovery. Finucci just gave the patented answer that Leo had used himself when he came upon some skill or knowledge that he had no idea he had. I don't know. Leo and Finucci had immediately walked up to the ramp to the nearest comm panel and made some inquiries. Together they learned that Finucci was a designated medic of the crew with the equivalent skill of a physician's assistant and emergency room nurse, able to do almost everything up to emergency surgery. Any other medical emergencies would be handled by the auto dock on board. The auto dock was a huge cabinet-looking device that would fit an entire person, and once enclosed, the person would immediately be evaluated and treated for what injury, wound, or damage they had sustained. The greater the injury, the longer the time in the auto dock. The medic's room was located in the central part of the ship on the level between the two fighter bays. This allowed for the fastest access by all personnel from any section of the ship. Leo acted as guinea pig due to some of the crew, mostly ones from before the computer era, roughly 60%, were very suspicious and or superstitious. So Leo hopped up on the table and Finucci activated the cabinet. The lights went down and were replaced by a green glow inside the cabinet. Leo felt warm pulses of energy going up and down his body, the scan. Then he felt a warm tingling going on near his injured shoulder. Then the lights came back on and the cabinet opened with an electronic hum. Sitting back up, Leo announced to the worried-looking crew, "All better now." Since that time, there had been a few needs of the auto dock. One time, Chief Tuatelli had almost severed a finger and had been placed in the bay, came out a few minutes later with just a hint of a scar. Another time, after a spill while on a ground patrol, Holiday came out a few minutes later with quickly healed broken ribs and with a road rash in the final stages of healing. Leo looked through the med scans once more, then closed out that set of screens and moved back to his energy level screens. The trip through the area between the solar systems was going to take an hour. Leo ran through his equipment status checks, then ran a check on everyone else's boards and panels. Most of them were doing projections and diagnostics to ensure that the jump to hyperspace had not shorted out any of their circuits. Leo ran through the gunner systems and checked to see what the most bored guys on the ship were doing. Leo had given his Rangers and Sergeant Gonzalez a great deal of latitude when they were not actively working on their tutorial or other assigned tasks. His four ball turret gunners were running through simulation programs, engaging targets only they could see on their screens. They had been running bets between them, Sergeant Gonzalez throwing himself into the pool even though his larger gun was a bit slower than his smaller, more maneuverable ball turrets. Then there were bets against partners, partner teams, and between partners as well. Leo reviewed their percentages to see how they were doing with their current round of drills. Holiday, the best shot on record, was 88% hit rate. His partner in the belly turret, Fundikowski, at a slightly lower 85. In the rear section of the ship, Leo found what he suspected to be happening. Verde, in the top turret, was at 83%, and Fanucci, in the lowest, was only at 70%. Leo checked on his head enlisted man, Sergeant Gonzalez, who was monitoring the drill as well. Leo pulled him up on a private comm channel for a talk. "Are you calling to talk about Fanucci, Cap?" "Yeah. What is the problem this time, Gonzo?" "Well, this time he is leading too much. Remember last week he wasn't leading at all. Well, now he is doing just the opposite," Gonzalez said with a sigh. They had been having problems since they had left Sanctuary. Leo was a bit worried. The fleet standard was 75%, and Fanucci's best had only been 73%. They had tried all kinds of things, running hours of extra simulations, trying motivational talks by both Gonzalez, Kim, the ship's head gunner, and Leo himself had tried talking to him as well. None of it had changed anything. If anything, it made Fanucci more nervous, and afterwards his scores had gone down initially, then climbed half a percentage point, till they had reached his current level. Leo shook his head, and Gonzalez nodded in agreement. They had run out of solutions, and did not know where to go from here. "Maybe if we leave him alone, Sergeant, and stop stressing him out by talking about it, he will get it together on his own." "Maybe, Cap. Can't hurt," Gonzalez said, shrugging on the screen. "Okay. Leo out," and ended the conversation. Leo moved to his next order of business. Unstrapping himself from his chair, he rose up, clapped the rest of the cockpit crew on the shoulders, and walked towards the rear of the ship, ending up in the top fighter bay. Leo stood in the doorway and waited for Packer to motion him in, out of courtesy more than anything else. Leo had let the fighter jocks basically run their own bays. Packer motioned from the side of the ship, and Leo entered. Packer climbed down the fighter. Leo approached the ship and put his hand on it, slid down the side. The ship was truly a beauty to behold, even sitting here in the bay, light being absorbed into its all-flat black surface. The basic overhead outlines of the ship was one of a small case letter T with the cockpit sitting near the crossbar of the letters, the engines being in the smaller upper portion of the T, and the main gun running the length of the ship, missiles mounted on end portions of the letter, designated F2 but nicknamed the Shark for its speed and deadliness. Leo admired the ship as Packer approached it with a smile on his face. "Well, Cap, how do you like my ship? It has a name now. Want to hear it?" "Sure. The Sober Panther." Leo looked over the ship. "Good name. Your idea?" Leo asked. "Ah, no. My wingman's. And I named his ship. Sort of a partner's joke, if you will. I'll let him tell you. You'll enjoy hearing it from him," Packer said, smiling a bit broader than usual. Leo did not even want to venture or speculate what was going on between his two fighter pilots. He just decided to continue with why he was here. "Are you ready to begin ground operations once we reach Glacier?" "Glacier, an ice planet for cold weather training, the first stop in their training rotation." "Sure, the machines have been reset for the cold climate, and the weapons and equipment have been coated with a conditioner to keep them working. The guys have read through all the drills, or so they say. We shall see when we hit the snow, but all in all, I am ready." "Okay, well then, I guess I've got no reason to be here. Then carry on, Lieutenant," Leo stated. He took another long look at the Shark and turned away when Packer took out a rag and started polishing the surface. Leo gave the hang loose sign that Chief Tuatelli had made popular with the crew. Packer threw the sign back and continued wiping down the exterior of the ship, even though it did not need it. Leo's next stop was in the lower fighter bay. Hitting the ladder and sliding down the two decks, he made it quickly to the other bay. He repeated the procedure of standing in the doorway until Logan motioned for him to come into the bay. Logan was sitting on a stool working at the mechanics bench. Leo looked over his shoulder when he approached, trying to decipher what he was doing. "Looks like I scanned it." "It is," Logan said in his normal blunt tone. "Broken?" "No." "What are you doing with it?" trying to figure out how to get a few hundred more meters out of it.
I see. Is it a spare or the one from your ship?
Spare. Leo was getting frustrated. He wanted to get the ship's name, but Logan's being his normal antisocial self.
I just came from Packers Bay.
Nothing.
Told me the name of ship, Leo said, pulling out a stool and sitting down.
Still nothing.
Said you gave it the name.
Uh-huh. Picking up a pair of electro stringers and applying them to the unit.
Good name.
Nothing again.
Like the name. He also said that he gave your ship a name.
He did, Logan said, stating it as a fact.
Okay. You have got my curiosity up. What is it, Logan?
Logan down his unit, turned to him and said, with a deadpan expression, "The Smiling Jaguar."
Leo chuckled. Good name, I guess.
Logan just stared at him, shook his head, and went back to his scanner.
Still chuckling.
Okay. Do you need anything?
No, Logan said, not looking up.
Okay, well, I'm going to go.
Sure.
Leo walked out of the landing bay, chuckling as he went. It's not that funny, Leo, Logan said, over his shoulder, in deadpan seriousness.
Leo just waved over his shoulder and continued on his way. The unmanned portion of the ship was under red light conditions, due to Leo's orders. When the lights weren't needed, they should be out.
Leo had worked out most of the running conditions with Yoshida and Abraham. Abe had been fundamental in the process due to his extensive research into detection methods in space. They had come up with 10 different levels to operate under, running from the top one, which was absolute and total blackout conditions with minimal heat, up to level 10, which was full running lights with sirens and whistles. The highest condition was times when Leo wanted the ship to be noticed. The conditions controlled under the operating levels were heat, communications, and energy flows. These levels could be arrived at with a simple command code. Right now, they were under level 5. Not too harsh, but at the same time, enough to remind the guys to keep thinking serious. Leo arrived back at the engineering section and entered after punching in the security code. This was something else the officers had decided to install. At certain crucial areas, such as engineering, the flight bays, and the bridge deck, access codes had been initiated. This is a way to keep possible boarders from gaining access to them. The worry about boarders had come about while they were back on the Endurance. Leo found out that the Marines were there to simulate the Orlarian's boarders that De Clooney had talked about. While Leo and the crew had instituted some procedures to overcome any boarders, if they ever arrived. They had even installed a few booby traps under the deck and in the walls on various levels. Leo wanted to test the conditions on some Marines, but unfortunately it was not on the training schedule. The engine room was in the usual state of disarray. Well, disarray was a harsh term. Maybe free-flowing chaos was the term he was looking for. The walls had been painted in day-glow colors and seared with laser blasts. Faces and words leapt out at Leo, and he read some of the newest phrases. Leo is paranoid. De Clooney sucks eggs. Space is a vacuum. Leo smiled at the phrases, both old and new. Leo always knew if he wanted to find out what the crew was thinking, all he had to do was come back here and read the walls. The laser blasts were Chief Fia's attempt to clear out old graffiti. Chief, where are you? Leo bellowed, looking for some feed hanging out from under some access panel or tools flying over a piece of hyperdrive. Instead, he found the Chief and Flavia sitting around a work table, eating hard-boiled eggs and playing chess.
Over here, Cap, Fia said, making a move then taking a bite.
Don't get up on my account. I mean, I'm just because I'm the captain of the ship and all.
Okay, we won't, Fia said, watching Flavius move.
Leo just shook his head and wandered over to look over the game. From the looks of it, Flavius appeared to be winning.
Chief?
Yeah, Leo, he replied, looking up from the board.
Well, I was thinking about our upcoming missions, and I wanted to add another feature to them.
What would that be, Fia said, while moving a pawn, one of his three pieces remaining on the board.
Well, we might run into a problem with the equipment. Some might not be able to make it back to the ship. I want you to send one of your minor repair droids with each mission, one droid for each different environment.
Okay, but I'm going to let Flavius here handle them, motioning across the board. He is the resident expert on droids around here.
Leo turned toward Flavius.
They'll be ready, sir, Flavius said, keeping his head down as always. I'll send Fee on the first mission.
Fee?
Yes, sir, I named the droids. Fee, Fi, Fo, and Fum, Flavius said timidly.
As in, I smell the blood of an Englishman?
Yeah. He watched the movie while we were trying to pick out a name. It just popped out.
Leo bit his lip to keep from laughing.
I see. And what was the movie?
Some Laurel and Hardy flick based on Jack and the Beanstalk, Fia said, moving his piece towards the far end of the board.
Flavius watched the move, then used a rook to take the pawn, placing Fia's king in check.
Arg. Let's get back to work and put this stupid game away. He stood up and stomped away from the table. Flavius cleaned up the table, not saying anything as Leo stood there leaning up against the bulkhead, feeling as though he was watching something that happened quite frequently. He does this every time he starts to lose, Flavius said, finishing up clearing the table. Oh, I see. And what is the record between you two? That is not important. What is getting this backup reactor core control panel rebuilt. Flavius, get back here, Fia yelled from behind some machinery. Leo chuckled, and Flavius just shrugged his shoulders and grabbed a toolkit. Okay, Chief, I'm out here. Just get those droids ready for their first run on those planets. You got 24 hours or so. Leo heard Fia yell back, yeah, yeah, and then some tools banging away against something. Leo worked his way out of the engineering section and walked back to the bridge. They came out of hyperdrive right on schedule and found themselves on the perimeter of a solar system. 4 hours after that, approaching a high orbit around a planet designated as Glacier, the planet furthest from the system's star, they had just received directions on how to proceed from this point. On each planet, over the next 8-week period, they would achieve orbit, contact a squadron ship in charge of the planet, they would again get a mission profile, they would complete the task assigned, do an after-action review with a designated advisor, and then move on to the next planet and repeat the process. Until the whole rotation was completed, their evaluators during this time would be the 2nd Squadron's Marines, the fighter launcher, the heavy attack cruiser, and the bomber attack ship, and the Endurance. Overseeing the entire operation was the Squadron's command ship, the Unified Earth Fleet ship Normandy. Leo was looking forward to the training. The ship and the crew were scheduled for rigorous tests, including joint ground and air attacks, reconnaissance and surveillance missions. The 4 planets were designed to get the crews ready to work with their equipment in all types of environment. Planet 1, designated Glacier, as the name suggested, most of the planet was just that, about 50% of it covered with ice, the other half with ice-cold water. The next planet, Barren, was a combination of deserts and volcanoes with nasty wind currents, guaranteed to give a good pilot fits of rage. Vista was this jungle planet with nasty terrain, variety of both deadly flora and fauna. Planet 4 was a giant airless rock planet with a variety of terrain from mountains to large flat plains. The last, and definitely not the least, was Tunnel, a planet filled with cities, caves, mines, and sewers designed to train the fleet for urban combat skills. Everyone was in their assigned position when they first got the call from the Inchon, 2nd Squadron's Marine Transport Ship. Captain Grant, take up a position at planetary latitudinal line 30 degrees, orbital level 6, and await further instructions. Roger. Grant out. Leo noted towards Moon, who was piloting the ship while Yoshi was running some tests. Moon made the adjustments, and the ship was maneuvered to the designated position. Larry, give us a heads-up display on the planet's surface, designating locations of the fleet personnel and equipment in red, Leo stated, trying to get a feel for the planet beneath him and possible landing areas. The display came up on the window of the cockpit. Leo noted the positions, then proceeded to ask for the positions and displays of ships either on the planet's surface or in orbit. There were at least 20 ships in orbit, including the Inchon, which was in a tight circular orbit around the planet's northern pole. Leo watched the display for a while, then called a ship's conference down on the crew deck. Okay, gang, tonight we will be getting our orders for the next 2 weeks. I don't have a clue what we're going to have to do except what was in the ship's databanks. As soon as they get the orders, I'll read through them and then post them on the bulletin board. Leo looked around the lounge and did not note any questions. He had left the public address channel for Moon and Gutenberg, who stayed up on duty up in the cockpit. Okay, guys, I want you to get a good night's sleep tonight. As soon as I learn what is needed, I will set the duty roster. If I can, I might just set Larry to full alert and we can all sleep. I have a feeling that we won't be getting much sleep anytime soon, if I know the squadron commander. Meeting dismissed. Everyone get something to eat and hang loose. Leo grabbed some food and went to his cabin to read.
We hope you enjoy this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as aaforinger. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.